Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for listening to AFR. A lot more to talk about this half hour, and we're going to raise the level of our discussion from Planet Fitness stories involving people who go in there and try to exercise without any clothes on.
Right.
We're not going to talk about that anymore because that issue's resolved, by the way.
It is. Man was arrested.
Yeah. What was he charged? In charge with indecent exposure, right?
I'm sure that charge covered covered the matter.
So to speak.
So to speak.
So to speak. All right, Tim, with Ed and Walker, and if you'd like to watch the show on the internet, go to Facebook Live and type in Today's Issues, or YouTube. You can watch the show there as well. And Steve Jordahl has replaced Fred Jackson.
Yeah, well, he replaced Fred Jackson. You can follow him. I'm following.
You're following Fred Jackson. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Tim.
What's in the news?
Let's start with politics. The University of Virginia political analyst Larry Sabato is saying that as of now, Democrats are favored to take the House in the midterms, to take control of the House.
Mm-hmm.
He's shifted 17 House races from likely Republican to toss-ups and moving them all left. They need 23 seats to make up the deficit in the House. They are leading with a 10-point lead in the generic ballot. If you just ask somebody, do you favor Republicans or Democrats in the House, the Democrats have a 10-point lead, and they're fundraising well. So Republicans need to get on their horse and ride a bit, I think.
Sabato, is that how I pronounce his name?
That's how I pronounce
it. I watched him for years on Fox News.
Yep.
Very smart guy, University of Virginia, political analyst. When I hear his name, I pay attention to what he says. And if he says Democrats are leading at this point, is that what he says?
That's what he says.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's not unusual in the sense that, historically, the party opposite the president, the sitting president, in the midterms does make gains, if not big gains, in a midterm election. By midterm, we mean between presidential elections. So, but you know what? We're a long way till November.
A long way. A lot of stuff can happen.
Also, this morning an article on The Hill talking about this, that you're talking about, Larry Sabato. It also points out that there's a high number of open seats. In fact, they said it's the highest number of open seats of any post-war election except for 1992, which gives Democrats many more targets than the GOP. So you put that together with what you're talking about, Tim, in terms of the midterm election. The party out of power in the White House generally picks up seats, and this would not be unusual.
Open seats because so many Republicans have retired.
They're just getting out
of the game.
One thing that 2016 did is it changed my view of polls and of polling, because there's something off about Trump supporters. I don't know what it is, but people don't like going on the record in support of a man that everybody thinks is a Nazi.
Walker. I don't think he's a Nazi.
Address your emails to Walker Wildman.
The left's narrative is that he's a Nazi sympathizer.
Yeah, right. The loudest voices say that.
And when you're being interviewed by a pollster, the media, you go,
Who's really calling me?
I'm going to keep this to myself.
Right.
So we'll see. And really, this is the first election after 2016 election as far as midterms go. A lot of these polls are accurate, then it will kind of get back into normal. But you may see where, Democrats are projected to win or vice versa, and it doesn't pan out because of polling.
I agree with you. Polling was just terribly off during the 2016 elections, and no one's quite figured out exactly why. And the opposite party, the party out of power, does generally do better in the first midterms. But if I was a Republican strategist, I would be worried. I'd be getting on the phone and seeing if I could start the process of energizing the base.
But here's the problem, for the Republican establishment. okay? And that is that there, in my opinion, there is a clear disconnect amongst Republicans between those who support Donald Trump and those who have faith in the Republican establishment in terms of Congress. So they look at Congress and they say, well, you got, you know, you can't seem to get anything other than these monstrosities passed, you know, omnibus bills. You're not getting, you know, you're not getting Trump nominees in. You're not doing anything. So I would think that on the Republican side, Republican voters, they're probably dispirited about Congress, although they might not be about Trump.
One of the things that I don't think is being reported enough, and it's not being talked about enough, is the fact that the gum is seems to be in the Senate, where things stall and can't get passed, and Mitch McConnell needs to take responsibility or power or be replaced or something. But yeah, the House is actually passing a lot of good stuff. It just doesn't get through the Senate. So and the House is what we're talking about. The question I have is, if the Democrats were to take the House, what does that mean? You would for sure, I would bet, well, I don't bet, but I would almost be willing to guarantee you that articles of impeachment would be brought up and voted on.
For what?
For President Trump.
Well, I know, but I mean, what charge would be leveled against the president?
Maxine Waters says so, Ed. Good night. Do you need any more than that? You got to have something.
What would be the charge?
But you know what?
Collusion?
They would say obstruction of justice or collusion.
They'll make up something.
They will find something that they can vote on.
You would have to have a pretty substantial swing to go from Republican to Democrat, something to the order of.
They got 23 seats.
23 seats.
Okay.
They got to pick up.
Well, but, it could happen. But the Democrat establishment, if you will, the leaders in the Democratic Party have not really come around to the whole impeachment idea.
They haven't, but.
So you would have to, let's say the Democrats do get the House, then you would have to convince the majority of the Democrats, which would probably be a slim margin, they would all have to vote for impeachment. So the chances of that happening.
Yeah, all the Republicans need to do is hang on to the House by 5 or 10 or 15. Keep Nancy Pelosi from becoming Speaker of the House again. I think that's just hang on one by one or two.
Well,
or three.
And Trump will, and he is doing a little bit of campaigning. I would think his schedule will pick up in terms of campaigning for Republicans.
Yeah. The main thing is the Senate, in my opinion, because Republicans need to get the. Republicans, I sound completely partisan. We need to get conservative judges appointed to the federal bench, including the Supreme Court, and that all takes place in the Senate.
Right.
So,
and they've been successful in getting some through.
And I think the Republicans have a chance to pick up 3 or 4 seats in the Senate, which would be for as far as confirming judges would be that we would like to see.
That'd be huge.
There's two things happening between now and November.
What's
I can
that?
Almost guarantee it.
The end of baseball season.
One is the end.
The beginning of football season.
The start of hockey season.
So there's three things, Steve.
There's more, yes, that's true. Well, there you go. But affecting the election, the economy is on extremely solid footing. So I would expect, barring a global disaster of some sort, that the economy will still continue to be strong. That's going to be a strong headwind that the Democrats are going to have to fight. And the second thing is that I can almost guarantee the Democrats will find something in September or October to be the October surprise that's going to try to get those last-minute voters or whatever people to switch sides. It's going to happen. Take it to the bank.
You're also going to have the Kavanaugh
confirmation
battle. Yeah. If it's going to be a battle, we'll see. So there's a bunch that'll happen between now and then. My birthday. End of August.
Well, and that's going to affect the vote tremendously.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Somehow. Maybe.
Today's
I'll be 60 this year.
Really?
60 years old.
I
don't look it.
You don't look a day over 59.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Today's issue is the name of the program. Happy birthday.
To come.
Whenever
I got a ways to come. But
I'm Tim with Ed and Walker. And if you'd like to send us an email, comments@afr.net. Steve Jordahl is with us. Next story, Steve.
Let's talk about some ethics. Some scientists in Scotland have been able to develop the first embryo using stem cells. In other words, there was no traditional fertilization of an egg.
Of a this human? A mouse. You're talking about a human?
This is no. a mouse embryo oh, at this
a mouse
point.
Embryo.
But this is the blueprint that they could use. And they so they have gathered three types of stem cells and were able to put this early type embryo together, and it started the process of growth. What they say they're hoping to find out is the process, what happens in the very, very early stages of life. And if there's things that can be corrected at that point that lead to, that could eliminate birth defects and some of those kind of things. But there's ethical concerns because, of course, when you create an embryo from stem cells, you're not bringing together, if it was a human, you're not bringing together a man and a woman and creating a child. Theologically, this is just up in the air. I suppose they'd have a soul, but you know that would be the discussion. And there's rules against human cloning, and this is basically what that is. So there, as usual, the technology is getting in front of the ethics, mm-hmm. something like this.
Now, what is? Let me ask a question that will reveal my scientific ignorance. Okay,
I'm willing
to. This gets a little bit in the weeds. So,
this is not an. And nobody here may have an answer to this. Why are so many of these trials performed on mice? I mean, I know it's done, and this is we had this trial with mice, and we gave them X amount of sugar, and you know, they grew a second head. You know, so what is it about mice biology or anatomy that makes them a subject that then they scientists extrapolate and say, well, maybe we could do this with humans?
Well, it's a process along the way. I think mice, because they're abundant and easy to grow, you have a lot of mice. They're
mammals,
basic.
I know that
their basic bodily functions are similar to what humans are. So I think on the way up, what you do generally is you have mice, which are kind of accepted around the world as lab-type animals. And then the next thing you might try, if it's medicine or if it's something like this, you might try it on a primate.
Primate, okay. So they go up the
They will probably ladder. That's the way they generally try to do it. But then they stop. The ethics of science is, in a lot of countries, make people stop at humans. Scotland, for example, will not let you work with a human, and they have to be donated embryos, and they won't let you work with them past, I think it's 14 days. After 14 days, you have to destroy the embryo that's been donated. There's some ethical concerns mm-hmm. from the pro-life view about even that.
But. Yeah, the interesting thing here is, from what I read, is the goal, I guess you could say, the short-term goal is you can analyze the early stages of life, mm-hmm. conception, and because the mice, the conception and growth early stages of mice is so similar to human babies that you can analyze maybe where people have what do you call it when you lose a child at a very early stage, when you have a
miscarriage,
yeah, like a miscarriage or something. You could analyze if you know the same steps, and then
something went wrong there, and
yeah, and hopefully maybe you can start preventing some miscarriages.
So, and that's a good thing. And what I don't know from reading this, I know that they have three types of embryonic cells that they use, but embryonic stem cells in research, which are stem cells taken from a human embryo, anyway, in the human realm, and I think it's true in the animal realm. It's the destruction of a life, we believe, but also they have been tremendously problematic with tumor growths and everything. Every success that they've ever had, and I believe this is still the case, every scientific breakthrough has been taken from something called adult stem cells, which right. may be skin, it might be another part of the body, but it doesn't sacrifice anything. They just take a live cell, and they've figured out how to make this turn into a stem cell, which changes into different parts of the body. I don't know in this case whether they are making these embryonic cells out of adult stem cells and creating the embryo. They would have to be embryonic at some point if they're going to grow into an embryo.
Right.
But I don't know whether this is ethical research or unethical from that point.
And let me just throw this one other thing in to this discussion. If they find out that it is possible to take adult, let's say adult stem cells or even embryonic stem cells, and create a mouse, but extrapolating a person. This is interesting. Now, again, this may reveal my ignorance, but you know, a lot of atheists mock the idea of the virgin birth because they say, well, you know, folks, you can't have a baby without a conception. So if this is possible, and of course God can do anything he wants,
sure.
You know, he can just create an embryo. But did God do this in Mary?
Yeah.
Using embryonic stem cells or whatever and create without fertilization from a human father? So this would be a medical response then, a biological response to the atheists who have always mocked the idea of the virgin birth.
It's an interesting one.
Yeah, very interesting.
One of the things that's always bothered me about these things is that humans figure out, as soon as they figure out the science of something, they figure that they don't need God in it anymore.
Yeah.
Which isn't the case.
Right.
I mean, we're getting very detailed about what these stem cells do. The three different types of stem cells start out in this form, and they go on to make specific things in the body. One type goes to form the digestive system of the liver and the pancreas. Another goes to form the circulatory system, the lungs. The outer extraderm contains blueprints for the hair, the nail, the skin. Okay, so we understand this. We understand how it happens. We can even get in and see the mechanism. Does that mean that God didn't design it?
Right.
This is amazing stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing.
There you go.
I have
I could wax eloquent all afternoon.
I notice you've been holding your powder
on this topic.
Don't want to put us to shame.
What do you think?
Well, I could, bring forth my anatomy and physiology.
Your background.
My background there. I made a D in college, and I'm proud of it. And
made a D in A&P?
Yeah, man.
I actually never took it because it's a very hard class. Can I just throw one thing out there?
Go for it.
This is just the mystery of life. Okay, they say every 7 years your body has completely changed every cell out
really?
In your body. Yeah. So what's amazing to me is how do cells that replicate, okay, and replace old cells in my face, okay, go back in the same place? Within 7 years, I don't change, I age, but I'm still the same. How do the cells know to keep the same shape?
See, every growing cell starts as kind of a stem cell. Once they've differentiated, it's called, and they know what they're going to be, they've locked into the mechanism, then a skin cell will always replace a skin cell.
Yes, I know, but the face still looks the same. Why doesn't it give me a new face?
We wish it would, too.
I suppose I walked in.
Wow.
All right.
Getting personal here.
No. Anyway, that's just...
Ed, I wish I could answer your question and be the smart one here, but I have no idea.
Well,
it's part of the DNA.
I'll tell you what.
Inside the DNA of each cell tells the mechanism that tells if it's going to be brown hair, green eyes, white skin. It has all those instructions that knows exactly where to, how to. Your DNA is you.
I know.
That's why it's always going to be the same.
It's fascinating. All right, anyway.
I thought anatomy and physiology was hard till I hit kinesiology.
Till you hit Bless kinesiology?
You. I hit kinesiology. Huh?
Kinesiology, that's the...
You even know what I'm talking about, Steve?
Bless you.
Oh, okay.
Kinesiology,
you know what that is?
It's a study of movement and muscles.
And exercise of force. And
well, it's a study of every muscle and every bone in your body.
There you go.
The human body.
Well, you've probably had first-hand experience with that recently, haven't you?
Yeah, well, that's true. I have experienced a lot of that movement. All right, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ed's question remains a mystery.
Yes.
And maybe some listener can post it on Facebook or can let us know how it is. Your question to the scientific community is what again?
Well, if every cell in my body is replaced every seven years, how do the cells know to kind of reformat my face so that it looks the same?
Yeah.
That's the question. If somebody has an answer for that, we want to know it.
There you
I could get a Brad Pitt face or a Pee Wee Herman face.
Right, right.
But
it could
get
either
the Ed Battagliano face.
It could go either way.
Year after year.
Right.
That's That's my question.
All right. Okay. All right. What else you got, Steve?
Poor Senator Orrin Hatch. He's dead. Well, at least according to Wikipedia, he's dead. He came across a Wikipedia page which talked about Orrin Hatch as an American attorney and politician, and that he died on September 11, 2017. So he tweets back, "Hey Google, we might need to talk." And then through the rest of the day yesterday, he was tweeting out things he was doing. This is Senator Hatch reading a newspaper. Here's Senator Hatch giving Chancellor Merkel a gift. Here's Senator Hatch making an important state visit. Here's Senator Hatch at his 84th birthday party in March.
Still very much alive.
The theme was bacon. So, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. He's
good to see some of those guys have a sense of humor, right?
Yeah, I know, really.
All right.
Our attorney general has been talking. He is in
Jeff Sessions.
Jeff Sessions is in Washington, D.C. today.
Is he the attorney general?
you wouldn't know, would you?
Ooh. Yeah, Walker.
So, he is talking, and he is at a youth conference with Turning Point USA, a conservative group. They've got a couple hundred, maybe 1,000 or so conservative high school kids from around the country. And this is what he said.
Rather than molding a generation of mature, well-informed adults, some schools are doing everything they can to create a generation of sanctimonious, sensitive, supercilious snowflakes. We're not going to have it.
Super what?
Supercilious.
That is a disservice to their students and a disservice to the nation. After the 2016 election, for example, they held a cry-in at Cornell. I hope they had plenty of tissues for them to cry on. They had therapy dogs at the University of Kansas, Play-Doh and coloring books at the great University of Michigan, for heaven's sakes. I thought that was, give me a break. Students at Tufts were encouraged to draw out their feelings. Well, I can tell this group isn't going to have Play-Doh when you get attacked in college and you're involved in a debate. You're going to stand up and defend yourself and the values that you believe in.
There you go.
Jeff Sessions there talking to 1,000 conservative students?
Yeah, a bunch of them.
That's good news.
Yeah. Yeah, from around the country.
Absolutely.
And next week you're going to go to Patriot Academy?
That's right. I'll be in Patriot Academy in Austin, Texas.
Are you going to be speaking there?
Yeah, I'll be speaking for about 30 minutes. And
now, who is Patriot Academy for those who
Patriot
don't know?
Patriot Academy was started by Rick Green and David Barton of Wall Builders. Yeah. And what they do is for 3 or 4 days, they train students on the Constitution, on how Congress works, on how laws are made, et cetera. A lot of leadership skills taught. So
you're an alumnus of that.
I am.
You're going to speak. What's going to be your topic?
I'm going to talk about the creatures of the swamp and talk about four different ways that people in Washington maintain power.
Maybe you can give that talk to our listening audience sometime.
Yeah.
Soon, yeah. All right.
You know, he has a show on the weekends. That would be an ideal spot for
Exposing Washington. What time does that come on?
2:30 Central on AFR each Saturday.
Do they play Exposing Washington at the health club?
Not sure, but tomorrow.
Oh, don't.
Tomorrow I will be hosting Sandy Rios in the morning.
There you go.
Really? Good for you.
So if you want to tune in tomorrow.
I listen every day on the way into work. So I'll hear you on
Great.
There.
You know, Sandy's asking you to host a lot, and she doesn't ask Ed or me.
I don't want to get up that early and do it. Let the young guy do it.
I know. Wouldn't you like to be asked every once in a while?
Just so I could say no? Yeah, all right. I'm good with that.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Walker's doing a great job helping out host Sandy's show when Sandy can't do it. All right, Steve, thank you.
My pleasure.
Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of Today's Issues. Keep listening to AFR.